everyone. Welcome to the Let's Do It Afraid podcast. Today we have a special guest. She is the co-founder of Glory Revealed Clothing. She's also the founder of Evie's Tree Clothing brand. She has an amazing blog and a podcast called Glory Revealed Musings. She's a single mom to two beautiful kids and one of the bravest women I know. Oh. Everyone, please welcome Amy Wolmer Miraflor.
Oh, that's so sweet of you. Thank you. What a nice intro.
Thank you so much, Amy. I think I have told you, but I don't know if I have actually, that you're one of the reasons that I really started this podcast. Like, you really inspired me. You are really open and honest on your blog. And I remember when I joined the community of the blog, you would have like little meetings and we would meet via Zoom and you kind of started talking about having this idea of starting your own podcast. And I had kind of been sitting in that for a long time too. So just seeing how brave you were and how open and honest and just kind of putting yourself out there. And I don't know, you really, really inspired me. So I just want to say thank you.
Thank you. That's so sweet. You're so welcome. And I'm so glad that you're in my life. You are so sweet and kind, man, too kind. So
thank you so much. Do you want to tell everyone a little bit about yourself in your own words?
Yeah, sure. My name is Amy. I live here in Sonoma County. Gosh, my family moved here when I was 8. So from the city, we lived in San Francisco, and, I have been a long time Sonoma County person. I left for about 10 years and moved to the Central Valley when I got married and had my kids. That's where my ex-husband was from. And I came back because my dad had Parkinson's disease. So we came back to kind of be close to him. And the last, I guess it's almost 14 years that we've been here has just been a very insane mix of chaos and beauty, maybe the right way to say it. So I built up an online business that did a lot of money, multi-million dollars yearly in sales. And I really lost myself. It really drowned me and I lost myself there. And COVID happened and we actually did great during COVID, but the supply chain in 2021 really crushed us, the COVID supply chain issues that happened. And then my dad died. And then my ex-husband filed for divorce. So we have been through a lot. I have full custody of my two teens. I have been the sole caretaker, provider, whatever you want to call it, for the last 3 years. And it's been probably the hardest thing I've ever been through, but maybe one of the most beautiful things I've ever been through, because through this time, I've had to really learn to lean on my faith and to really kind of develop who I really want to be. And it's changed me and it's shaped me and it's made me just extremely grateful for pain and suffering. So that's what I write about over on my blog, Glory Revealed Musings, and my podcast, Glory Revealed. We talk a ton about how the things that are what you would maybe think are bad are really kind of good and they make you who you are. So, that's who I am.
Thank you for that introduction of yourself. And we will definitely talk about all of those things.
Yeah.
All of that has been so inspiring to see from the outside looking in, just, and how open and honest and vulnerable. And anyone who is not part of that community or in that blog, I definitely recommend that you guys go check it out. And we will give you all of that information because it's really inspired me. It's really transformed my life. So I just really thank you so much for that.
Yeah, that means so much because, when you're doing it, you're like, do I really want to even say all this? But so that really means a lot. Thank you.
Thank you. Can you tell us, Amy, what is a fear that you're currently struggling with today?
Fears are one of my biggest, there's a long line of anxiety in my family. So that has been one of the things that I am really working hard on breaking in my life is letting anxiety and fear kind of rule me. So, half the things I think that you worry about never actually even happen. And I think my lawyer has said to me, 30% of the things that you worry about actually happen, but only 5% of them are as bad as you think they're going to be. So that has really helped me, kind of manage my fears. With that said, I still really have a lot. I think one of my fears is how I'm going to be able to financially support my family. You know, we made a really good living and I lost it all. And so, you know, am I going to be able to stay in my house? Am I going to be able to put my kids through college? How am I going to, right now, my daughter, like her car, how am I going to fix her car? Like all of these thoughts go through my head on a daily basis. But I also fight them on a daily basis with my faith. And, you know, one of my favorite scriptures is God has not given me a spirit of fear, but of a strong mind and a sound heart. So I say that over and over, strong mind, sound heart, you know? And so that's how I kind of make it through my fears. If that makes sense.
That's actually my favorite Bible verse too.
Yeah.
And I've always wanted to like get it tattooed, like
oh,
just
smart.
Right here. But my husband is so against tattoos. That's a different story. But I've told this story before that when I got a butterfly back here, I didn't really tell him. It was kind of like a last minute decision.
Oh, you just did it.
I just did it with my sister. It was like a matching tattoo. And then he didn't talk to me for a week. He was so upset. So
No.
Yeah. So that's a whole different story.
But we're not having a tattoo anytime soon.
That is my favorite Bible verse. I love that verse so much. I constantly say it to myself as well. Like every day I repeat that to myself. And that's always how I start my mornings because same, I've, you know, dealt with a lot of anxiety and a lot of fears and I feel like it's held me back in a lot of things. But the fear that you have is definitely valid. We had a single mom on here a while ago. Her name is Sandra Contreras, beautiful, beautiful girl. And that's her biggest fear too, is like, how am I going to provide for my kids? And, you know, my mom was a single mom. And so single moms to me are the strongest, bravest, just most amazing out of this world creatures, because I don't know how they do it. You know, I have support and it's hard being a mom.
Yeah.
So I can't imagine just doing that all on my own. So,
yeah, thank you. It's hard. And for any single mom who's listening, you're definitely not alone. You know, I have made a lot of money over the years, but when you are a single mom, solely responsible, I have no co-parents. And, you know, when you are in it alone, that is really hard. And so I want to just validate anybody else who's listening. Like, it's kind of, doesn't really matter how much money you've made or how amazing you are at work. You don't have the bandwidth that everybody else has because you just don't have that partnership. And that's a really tough pill to swallow. So, you know, for anybody listening, you're not alone. 100%.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you for saying that. And same for you. Same for you too. But I mean, you're doing an amazing job. You have such great kids. So, you know.
Well, I mean, yes, they're going to be great in Jesus' name. That's what I keep saying. They're going to be fabulous. It's hard. Teens are hard. Let me tell you. How old is your oldest?
My daughter's 17. She'll be
18. Right. So I thought they were around the same age. Yeah. It's really freaking hard. It's like, man, this is, you know, there's all those memes out there that, you know, you've seen them. I love the one of David from Schitt's Creek where he's doing all of his faces and it's like, you know, the moms of toddlers thinking this is the worst stage, you know, and it's like, no, it's all bad. It's bad from the beginning to the end. It's all bad. But at the same time, it's honestly the most rewarding job you can do. It's beautiful, but it is all hard. Really.
Oh, amen. Yes.
Yeah.
We talk about this all the time. It's the most rewarding job, but it's seriously the hardest job. And you on your personal Instagram page, you always share, you know, memes and things you've read and books.
Oh yeah.
I read this one book that you recommended. What was it called? I loved it. It was about raising boys and
The Emotionally Strong. Yeah. David Thomas. God.
Yes.
Anybody who's got a boy needs to read David Thomas. That's all I gotta tell you. He and Sissy Goff, they're co-partners. They own a I don't even know what they call it. It's this co-therapy place in Tennessee, and they're actually right. They were they're right in the community of that school shooting that happened in Tennessee. I think it was a Catholic school. I can't quite remember, but they took in all of those kids and are doing all of the therapy with those kids. They are extremely talented. And so if anybody needs a good book on boys, David Thomas does an immaculate, I mean, just his way he's able to describe and explain what boys are going through. You know, it's a little bit odd for a mom to be like, I don't get what's going on. Like, where's their brain? You know, he explained it so well. So great. No, I'm glad you
book. Thank you. It was such a good book. And so I can just always relate to everything that you put there because I'm kind of in the same bandwagon, even though my son is only 8, but my daughter's 17. And that book, I'm like, I need to read that book once a year to like refresh. And because I feel like my son, it's like every year it's, you know, a totally different ball game.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, 100%. And he breaks it down to stages too. Mm-hmm. Like he does toddlers, you know, young elementary, junior high, high school. He does a great job at kind of breaking down where each kid is. And it's really, really helpful.
Yes, I agree. So in your blog, which, like I said, I love, by the way, you talk a lot about the fear of failure. And Yvette and I talk about that a lot as well, how, especially coming from immigrant parents, just always feeling like we have that weight on our shoulders of having to make them proud and not wanting to let them down. So fear of failure is, I think, like a core issue that I deal with on a daily basis. And I know Yvette can relate to that as well. What would you say is your relationship with that fear today?
God, that's a good question. Yeah, I've really tried to put a lot of energy into why I have a fear of failure. My parents, you know, my mom was a stay-at-home mom. My dad did quite well business-wise. He's an entrepreneur and did quite well. My mom was an immigrant. She and her family came to America from the United Kingdom. So she's Welsh and British, basically. But, you know, I think she really struggled to find her place in America. It was really hard for her to find, you know, she was 12 when she came, she had an accent, she felt really out of place. The whole math system and money system was different. So she really struggled. And so I don't know, I'm really dealing with this, like, generational stuff. Like, is this something I was taught? Or is this just something that's in my personality? I think as far as failure is concerned, I think it's a little bit of both. I think I really wanted to please my parents growing up. I really, my parents were both doers. My dad was like one of the most dynamic people you would ever meet, always doing something very successful, very intense. And I think, though, the sad part is I think really deep down inside, I kind of just like to be in my bed with a book. And I'm not really that intense. And so I think I created a persona that was trying to make everybody happy. And I think that created a fear of failure because I was setting who I was based on this idea that if I do everything right, people will really love me. And I don't know if you guys are familiar with the Enneagram, but if you've ever studied the Enneagram, which is a personality style, it's excellent. I highly recommend it. And I am a number 3 on the Enneagram, which is basically we, you know, put on a persona for everybody to love us. And so as far as failure is concerned, I think I had a fear of failure because I think I had put on a fake, I was living a lie, basically. I think I kind of had put on a fake persona. I don't struggle with that so much anymore because I failed so badly and I'm still here, you know? So I think part of my journey, you know, I'm going to be 49 in 3 weeks and I, you know, so I'm halfway through my life. And I think part of my journey has been this creating a person that wasn't really me. And you can either say it's a midlife thing or it's a God thing, but that just all got demolished. And now I'm becoming who I really am supposed to be. And I think because of this rebuilding of who I am, I kind of don't care anymore. You know, like this is who I am. And I have failed so badly, and yet I'm still here and I'm still functioning. And I know a lot of people don't love me, but I know God loves me, and that's enough for me. And So I guess I would say, as far as relationship is concerned, I think that got crushed out of me quite a bit. I think as humans, we probably all fight that. It's hard to put yourself out there. And there is a fear of, will I be accepted? Will I be loved? But I think I have a healthier viewpoint on it now after I've lost everything.
Yeah, I've never heard of that. What was it? What did you say?
Enneagram. Yeah, fabulous. You can Google it. There's a great podcast called Typology that highly recommend. His name is let's see, what is it? Ian Cron. He wrote several books on it. Highly recommend it. It's a the Enneagram is really kind of ancient in its theory, started like over, you know, several hundred years ago, but the Catholic Church really brought it to light in the 1930s. So there is a priest called named Father Richard Rohr, who really brought it to the world in like the late 70s, started doing like classes on it. And it's a really fascinating way to look at humanity and how people respond. And it's the idea is that we all have a false self, and that's what we put out there so that people will love us. And there's 9 false selves that like people kind of fall into. So mine is number 3. So the you know, fear of failure is in that.
Yeah, I need to look that up. I need to do some research, because I can very much relate to everything you just said.
Yeah,
is like spot on for me.
Yeah.
Like you said, I would be so happy to just sit on my couch with my hands all day. Same. I'd be fulfilled, right?
Yeah.
But it's like you put on this persona, like you said, and, you know, not only is like my mother kind of like, my mother is like one of the hardest working people I know. She had to be a single mom. You know, she's a businesswoman. She's an entrepreneur. Yeah. She does it all. And then my husband is the same way. He's like, go, 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 nonstop.
Yeah.
You know, it's literally like, I just feel like I'm constantly having to keep up with them. I can definitely relate to everything you just said. So I'm going to do some research on that as well.
Yeah. I think once you, the point of the Enneagram, and which is what I've done all the, like, I forget the one that's where it's initials like ENJF, or I've done all of them throughout my life. You know, a lot of businesses really like for you to take like there's that one that's, I don't know, I want to call it Pathfinder, but that's not what it is, but where you figure out your way. And, you know, in college I did a ton of classes that kind of psychology classes that kind of like had you pick out your style. The thing about the Enneagram that really resonated with me is, instead of just saying this is who you are personality wise, they tell you this is who you're presenting as, but this is how you can change to be a whole person. Mm-hmm. And I love that, because I think personality tests and personality, you know, groups can make you feel so stuck. Like, great, like, this is who I am. And, you know, you either have to have pride in it, or you kind of like, okay, I don't even want to talk about personality at all because I really hate mine, you know? So the Enneagram really lets you find that, like, no, this is who you are, but this is not who you have to be. And that was really life breathing for me.
That sounds amazing. Yeah. I'm going to go check that out.
Yeah.
So thank you so much for sharing that with us and with our listeners as well. So in your blog, you also have, you know, been very open and very honest about discussing your divorce. Mm. You talk a lot about how resentment kind of built on your part, and you describe resentment as the worst kind of disease. Mm-hmm. I know that I am guilty of this. I think that a lot of people probably in long-term marriages can probably relate to that as well. And I know that you are in therapy and you've done a lot of work on this as well, to kind of work on yourself and, you know, not to repeat those cycles. So what are some healthy ways, or, you know, in your opinion, what are some healthy ways that you have found to process those feelings? Mm-hmm. And what advice would you give to others who are dealing with this as well?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think I had to drop my resentment when I had to actually look myself in the mirror and own my part of the story. And, you know, resentment holds hands with victimhood. And you resent somebody because you feel like you've been wronged. And, you know, not always, but the majority, that really goes hand in hand. And I had to really come to, I have an amazing therapist. She's a strong Christian. She doesn't let anything slide, which I needed, because I kind of was kind of letting things, I created a delusional life, really, that wasn't living in truth. And, you know, she really called me out on it. And so as I started really saying, yeah, you know, he did X, Y, and Z, but I did this. And when you start switching the conversation from the other person to yourself, it's really hard to hold resentment, because the reality is we are all sinners saved by grace. We all make mistakes. And for sure, there are some imbalance, some marriages that are really imbalanced. And I get that. Like, I'm not there, you know, there was abuse in my marriage and other things that wasn't great, right? So that's imbalanced. But in the same token, like, there were things that I did that were not great, regardless of what that other person did. And I think if you are in a marriage where you're struggling with resentment, I would highly recommend that you put the sword down for a minute and just drop it and take some time and study yourself. I am not saying that the other person isn't wrong, because I think that that can be really misconstrued when you tell somebody to look at yourself, because, you know, there is a lot of unhealthy relationships. There are a lot of unhealthy relationships out there where people really are being hurt and damaged. And I was in that. And I guess what I would say is, if you don't deal with you, regardless of what the other person does, you will die. And it's never going to turn out good for you. So I would say, anybody sitting in a resentment seat, which we're friends, I've been there, like, I've sat in the seat, so this is no judgment. I would tell you, find a therapist who is willing to shine the mirror on you and take a minute, look at yourself. Stop blaming the other person and really examine, how can I be the best version of myself? How can I be the person that God has created me to be? And I think you'll find, once you start looking inward, that you almost can't judge. It's harder to judge when you're looking at yourself. And I think that creates more empathy. It creates more love in a relationship, because you will extend more grace once you realize you're no saint, you know? So I guess that's what I would say, is that if you are in a relationship where there's resentment, take a moment, put the sword down, do what you got to do. If you got to move out of the house for a month or two and go live with your mom, do it, you know, whatever you have to do to sort your own self out. Because at the end of the day, my relationship didn't survive. I'm still left with me. Like, that's it. I could sit here and be bitter towards my ex-husband. There's no point in that. Like, I don't even see him. I don't even have interactions with him. So why would I waste my time? It's now about me and who I am and what I'm going to offer the world, you know? So that's what I would say about resentment.
Thank you. Sometimes, gosh, I just feel like I can relate so much to you and everything that you say, because literally every night, that's my prayer, is just asking God to please help me be the best version of myself. Like, I just want to be the best Myra that I can be. Because at the end of the day, that's all I can really control. I cannot control, you know, what my husband does or doesn't do. I can only control myself. And I love that even though, you know, your marriage didn't work out as you probably hoped it would, that you still have a lot of hope for marriage in general, right? Yeah. Like, you do say on your blog, like, please fight for your marriage. Like, yes, please try to fix this when you're in it. Like, don't get a divorce if you don't have to. I mean, you do say, of course, if there's like abuse in any kind of way, that's a different ball game. But if it's something that, you know, isn't abuse and it can be fixed, you really, really advocate for that. So I just really wanted to say thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. I do. And I mean, shameless, like, you know, let me get on my soapbox for a second since you said it. 100%. Nobody wants to go what I went through, not to mention the fact that it's expensive. You lose everything, but your kids, I cannot tell you what this does to your kids. Now, there's this one side of the story that's like, well, isn't it worse for your kids to be, you know, in a poor marriage, in an upstanding home? Yes, but that is why you should take a second to sort yourself out. You be the one that says, you know, I'm going to straighten the arrows here. And it's, you know, I remember like probably, I don't know, a few, maybe like 6 or 7 months into this, one of my kids' therapists said to me, "You're straightening the arrows." And that vision in my head has, it's like you pick up one piece of an arrow and you glue the other piece has to follow. It just kind of goes. And if you can manage to get yourself together, your whole family will straighten out. And so that is my, like, you know, soapbox. Fight for your marriage. Change yourself if you have to. Do whatever you have to do. Do not go through what I went through, because it's the worst kind of pain. It's really not meant to be at all. So thanks for letting me get on my soapbox.
Get on your soapbox all you want. Thank you so much. So, you know, you have been through so much. Like you said, you know, you lost your dad, you lost your first business, Evie's Tree, you know, your marriage crumbled, all of this kind of happening at the same time. You have, you know, been very honest about the anxiety and the desperation that you felt during that moment in your life. Would you say that this was your, you know, rock bottom? And if so, you know, how did you pull yourself out of such a dark place?
That's a good question. Yeah, for sure. My rock bottom so far. That has been my rock bottom. I didn't pull myself out of the dark place for many months. Let's see. All of the pain went on for about a year. So really, my dad died in July of 2021. My ex left in October of 21, and then the last time I saw him was November of 22. So for the entire year of 22, I was very much trying to keep it together, and you know, but I didn't do very well. I ate and drank and slept and just, you know, I didn't know what was going on. My kids were sneaking out windows to go places. It was really rough. So it took me a while to figure out that this was it. You know, it took me a while. And by the time I had gotten to that place, I was so broken. I had gained so much weight. I couldn't even hardly move. Like, it hurt to move. All I saw was death. And I realized if I don't get myself together, I am going to die. And then my kids will have nobody. And so that was my driving force, to get me in a better place for sure. And then, you know, I started really diving into my faith. I started, you know, gaining control of my health. And it was just all, you know, uphill, downhill from there, however you want to look at it. So.
Oh, thank you for sharing that. Gosh, I just can't even imagine. But I think that as a mom, I can relate in just the sense of like when you're a mom, you can't really afford to just like lose your shit, right? Like you really, really have to, even if you have no strength, even if you're going through the darkest, hardest time of your life, like you do not have a choice but to get up, survive and figure it out and, you know, be a gangster. So it's like,
For sure. I mean, your kids, I guess you could say my kids saved me. I mean, your kids are a reason to live, you know, and so yeah, that really it forced me to change. It scared me enough to make me do what I had to do.
Yeah. And I mean, and I've even like seen the pictures that you would post of like what you looked like when you were going through that hard time, you know, and you can just see like your face was like puffy and you just looked sick, and just like seeing you now and how, you know, beautiful you are and how you have like light in your eyes and you just shine differently. And that, I think, is just a testament to the work that you've done and also to your, you know, your faith and your strength.
Oh yeah, it's not me. I mean, yes, I did the work, but ultimately God was the one who, you know, walked in and stepped in. Listen, anybody can have God in their life. You just have to open the door and you have to say like, I'm desperate enough, like, come in. I can't do this. I'm not capable. I tried it and it was a mess. So, I think anybody can have what happened to me and their transformation. It can happen to you. You just have to open the door. And I couldn't have done it without God, 100%. Yeah.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you for saying that. You know, when bad things happen, I can be guilty of kind of being angry with God. You know, I can sometimes feel conflicted because I'm like, you know, why did you let this happen? Right. But then at the same time, it's like, I'm responsible for I'm responsible for my own actions.
Yeah.
So, you know, I do have to take responsibility for the role that I played in all of that. How have all the hardships that you have endured kind of hurt your faith or your relationship with God? And at the same time, you know, how has it strengthened it?
Well, I think, yeah, that's a great question, because I think if you've never, so I'm for the first time in my entire life reading the Bible all the way through. So I cannot recommend this enough. This is the Daily Walk Bible. I was just reading it before I'm a little behind today. So I just read it before we jumped on. But if you are to read the Bible from start to finish and you see all the things God uses to bring glory into your life, all the bad stuff, all the junk and all the pain, if you read the Bible and see what God does, it starts making you, okay, God, so this is crappy. What are you going to do with this? Do you know what I mean? Like, how are you going to work this out? And I think for me, I kind of have stopped being, I haven't felt angry with God for a really long time, because I've watched him, things happen, change roads, heartbreaks, but yet he always has a plan and it always works out. And so I think I would say learning to trust God's plan in your life is really paramount, you know. And if you can manage, I think David is one of the most beautiful examples of, you know, if you look at David's life and how God, he was chosen to be king, but yet he was chased by Saul for like 15 years. And I just recently did a podcast on this because it's mind blowing. If you actually grasp how God uses pain and trials to make you a better person and to give you all the beautiful things you want in your life, you would be like, okay, God, I trust you. Not to say it isn't hard, like, for sure it's not easy, but you can start surrendering a bit and saying, not my will, your will, not in a belittled way, like, not my will, God, but like, hey, your will's good. I don't want my will. So let's go with your will, whatever, you know, has to happen. And so I guess that's how I manage to not get angry. To be fair, there are many times where I'll be like, ooh, God, I don't want, I am not okay with this. You know, like, there are those moments for sure. So
thank you. Thank you for that advice. I have not read the Bible beginning to end, but I do want to do that. So thank you for that reminder. And because it is something that I sometimes struggle with, you know.
For sure. Gosh, we all do, you know, but when you start seeing examples of how God really works, then you'll be like, oh, okay, maybe I could not be so, like, let me just sit here and trust for a minute, you know? But you're not alone. I mean, my goodness. I was angry, really angry at the beginning. Mm-hmm. So yeah. I hear you on that one.
Thank you. So in your Glory Revealed Musings Instagram page, in the bio, you say, encouraging women who are suffering that good can exist in the suffering, glory will be revealed in time. Mm-hmm. So as you know, we were just talking about that is something that I'm sure people struggle with, you know, the good, trying to see the good and the bad. But yeah. I do know that that message is really, really important to you.
Yeah.
So why do you think that message is so important to you? Why did, you know, why was it so important to kind of put that in the bio?
I truly would not be here if I didn't see God's glory, you know, revealed in my life. So I think that's why I put in there is that I went through, I lost my dad, I lost my business, I lost my marriage. You know, it's too soon to say how my kids are going to turn out, quite frankly. You know, like, it's been really hard. And there were some other things that went on that I never told anybody about that were also equally terrible, and I just haven't said. So it was a really rough time. And but yeah, I have never felt so much joy and peace. So it taught me to lean on him. It taught me to take a deep breath, be grateful for the small things. People remark on how different I look. It is truly because I have seen God's glory work in my life. I have seen him do miracles when I didn't think it was going to work out. I believe strongly that he uses these tough times to kind of push you in the dependence on him. And once you depend on him, he's got you. There's so much. The moral of the story is that you don't be afraid of suffering. It's really going to make you into something beautiful. And I think a lot of people suffer and they grit through it, right? Like, I'm suffering, and they get, like, you know, all bodily tensed up. And I think if you can surrender and be like, hey, God, this hurts and I don't know why and I hate this, and you daily surrender how you're feeling and by just, I don't love this, please give me strength to make it through this day, you will find strength, not in yourself, but in him. And he will make you beautiful. He really will. I think it's a bit of a joke that this is so hard for us to kind of understand, because the reality is we all know this through science, right? Like, you work out, it hurts, it's terrible, but yet it totally tones you and makes you better, right? All the breakdown of even our foods, like, to get into the ground, to make a seed, to grow, then break down again. Like, it's science. But yet as humans and humanity, we don't want to go through it. We don't want to suffer. We don't want to be beautiful like that because it's too hard. So I do think if we can manage to surrender to the process, allow God to do his work, it will make you something you'll be proud of for sure.
Wow, I never thought about that. Just blew my mind right now. Like, the whole science thing you just said, blew my mind.
Right? I don't think.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, but we don't think of it in the same way, you know, or even like when I tell my son 50 times a day, life's not fair.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm telling him, Noel, life's not fair. Like, you know, it's hard, it's not easy. And I tell him, you can do hard things. You know, you can do hard things. But then I have a hard time remembering that for myself.
Well, I think, so I have roses, which you and Jesus know that I have roses. I love my roses. I'm very, like, I have a deep connection with my roses. In fact, my daughter Evie is named after the Evelyn Rose, and David Austin Evelyn Rose, which you actually can't even buy anymore. But I love my roses. And every year I'm blown away. You chomp those things down to, like, literally nothing, to the point where you think they're dead. And they kind of are. Like, they die, they become dormant. And then, you know, late April, May come around, and it's like you have the most beautiful, assuming that you do the work, like you actually water and feed, right? So if you don't do that, you're gonna have problems. But yeah, you know, you have the most beautiful just blooms that just, and it's always the ones that they say the first flush is the most beautiful. Well, that's just because the first flush went through the hardest pain, right? And I don't know why humanity struggles so much with this concept. We do not want to suffer. We just do not. We want to be comfortable and happy, and we don't want anything bad to happen. We don't like it when, you know, we're off put or something, you know, sets us aside, or we don't want any of that. Like, it's me, 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 me. But yet that is not how God made this earth. It is supposed to be him, him, him. It's we die daily. We daily die. And when you die to yourself, when you allow yourself to be completely torn apart and then rebuilt back up, that's where the glory really is. And I think that's why I'm so passionate about it, because I, for years, was like, yeah, I can work myself into excellence and I can make myself this amazing thing. But the reality is that I just worked myself into a selfish human being that was really useless to this world. And, you know, the Bible says, it's in 2 Kings, I think. I just read it the other day. But you chase worthless idols, you become worthless yourself. And that's really basically it. You know, as humans, we chase the wrong things. And if we can just manage to just allow the suffering to happen, you will be okay. You really will.
Tell Myra this all the time. If I ever felt something, like, I didn't have time to deal with it, right? Like,
yeah.
I don't know what it is here. Like, I always tell Myra this, and I bring this up a lot. When I go to Mexico, like, I sit, I'm at peace, and I can, like, enjoy myself. When I'm here, there's external pressure, there's societal pressure. There's just, like, a rat race going on. Everybody's chasing their dreams here, right? And not to say that in Mexico people don't work hard, because they do. But they work to live, not live to work. So it's, like, the mindset is totally different. And here it's, like, I didn't have time to sit with myself until I had my panic attacks, until I had anxiety, until it got this bad. And then now I'm like, okay, well, when am I going to have time to go talk to a priest? Or when am I going to have time to open to God? Like, there's never a perfect time to be sick, to have any kind of disease, like, there's just no time. But yet, don't invest those 10 minutes into reading a Bible verse or things like that, you know? And it's like, we have to put that into our daily life, because otherwise, here we are, and this is how we got here, and I can work on myself.
Yeah.
And I'll just leave it there, but I know there's so many different people that can relate to everything that you just said.
Yeah, no, for sure. You know, it's funny you say that, because as a culture, America is extremely unhealthy with our relationship with work. We just really are. In fact, the Enneagram that I was telling you about, there's, like, in one of the Father Richard Rohr books that he wrote, he relates each country to an Enneagram, and the Enneagram 3 that I am is what he says America is, which is just an extremely unhealthy country where we're just working constantly. And no, you're right. I think after you had asked me, like, how did I get myself out of the black hole, right? Where that was one of the questions you asked, like, how did I get out of that? I was forced to get out of it, quite frankly, because of my kids. The second answer will be, I started crawling out of bed at 5 a.m. And I don't know what it is about 5 a.m. There's something out there in the world called the 5 a.m. club, where people get up and they do meditation and everything. And that's great. I 100% will tell you, there is something about getting up before the world does and before your kids do and centering yourself. I believe you should center yourself spiritually. There's a lot of different, you know, thought processes on that. But I get up every morning at 5 a.m. I make sure I get up before the kids are up, and I will make my coffee. I have a ritual: feed the animals, unload the dishwasher while my coffee is brewing, get my coffee, go sit on my couch, and I will read my little, it's like 3 to 5 chapters a day. I take my little journal out, and I write my prayers out to God, and I don't know where I would be without those moments. It has made me stop and not be the crazy me, me, me person that this country really wants you to be, right? Where you get up, you get going, you work out, you do this, you do that, you get to work. And it's me doing this 5 a.m. surrendering myself to God and praying has created who, that was the first step that, after I realized I was going to die and my kids were going to be without a parent, it was then that I've got to get myself centered. And the 5 a.m. prayer thing, you know, if anybody here doesn't know how to pray, I would tell you, don't even stress about that. Just sit on your couch, write out your thoughts, because God hears them, and you will start feeling him communicate with you. And it's a beautiful thing. And if you don't have any idea how to do that, message me. I'll walk you through it. But it is, it will change your life for sure. And will help you with your anxiety and with this crazy world that we think we need to live in.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that, because it's real.
It is real. 100% real. For sure.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. I need to do a better job of like journaling. I think I'm good with like sitting down, definitely getting up before my kids and everyone in my house gets up.
Yeah.
And just kind of centering myself, like you said. But I haven't actually started writing down, and I hear it all the time, you know, how important it is and how healing it can be and how it can really, really help your life. And so I do need to be better about that. So thank you so much. And like I said, I feel like I learned so much from you, and I'm so inspired by you, and you really have what's the word I'm looking for? Taught me to kind of see the good in the bad.
Yeah.
Just really sit down and think about how far I've come, you know, in my own life, but also just even my marriage. Like after, you know, reading your story and doing all of that, I really sat down and really looked at my marriage, and just sometimes I can be really hard on myself and my husband. And then, you know, through reading your thing, I had to remind myself, like, we were kids when we met. You know, I was 16 and he was 19. I mean, 20. He was 20. So it's like we were children. And I it has helped me to have a lot of grace for my husband, and just to see how far we've both come, and just to kind of see him as a human being.
I regret so much of my, how do I say, nagging. I don't know, just the way that I communicated with my ex-husband, I regret it a lot. I think we are so easy. We're so quick. It is so easy. And we are so quick to point fingers. Really are, because it hurts. Marriage hurts. There's an excellent book called Sacred Marriage that I highly recommend everybody to read. And the gist of it is that marriage is not for anything other than to make you holy. And that's really what marriage does, is it puts you in a place where you have to daily surrender yourself and change who you are and put somebody above you. And that's freaking hard. So, you know, pat yourself on the back, because it's no small feat that you got married as young as you did and you are still here. Like, that's huge. And I think learning to look at your spouse as human and have empathy for your spouse, I didn't do that at all, you know, and that's one of the things I regret. I think I tried towards the end, you know, but it had gotten just too toxic. And for anybody listening to this, there is a line that does get crossed in relationships. And if your marriage crosses it, it's unlikely it can be fixed. Even, you know, I believe God can fix anything, but it takes both parties to be willing to change. And I just didn't have that, you know. So be kind to yourself. Nice. You know, be kind. Because it is hard.
Yeah. No, thank you. I mean, hearing your story and your blog really, really helped me with that. So I just really, really want to say thank you for the work that you've done. And like I said, for just being so open and so brave. I mean, I hope that you know that it's making a difference, but if you haven't heard it before, I would really just like you to know that it has made such a difference in my life.
Thank you for telling me. I do feel like, God, what am I doing? Should I keep doing it? I question myself a lot. So thank you for saying that, because, you know, it is sometimes hard to continue to be honest, but yet I feel like it's part of my journey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I agree. So you have kind of started to get back into making clothes again. And in, you know, in your podcast, also starting your podcast as well. How does Amy do things differently today than in the past? And also, were you afraid to kind of start over and put yourself out there?
Oh, for sure. Evie Street left a lot of people in a really bad spot. We our concept with Evie Street was always to pre-order, always since day one. And with the supply chain, what happened was is a lot of things didn't get here. So we pre-ordered more. And unfortunately, we pre-ordered pieces that came from a dishonest factory, quite frankly, and they didn't actually ship the goods to us. So it got us in a pickle. And so I left Evie Street in a really bad place. And I for sure didn't love that. It's not my story, not uncommon. I mean, other businesses have been, it's not like I did the worst thing on the planet. There's lots of businesses that have been where I was, but I didn't love it. So starting over in that shadow was hard. For sure. How am I doing things differently? I'm not doing it through debt. I'm not doing it through, I'm being very careful, going very slowly. Thankfully, we were going slow enough that we saw that the tariff stuff was coming and we were like, nope, pause our orders. And that was a godsend. The fact that we were going so slow that we were able to pivot the way that we did. So right now we're on a pause. I don't know if we'll make any clothes this year with the way that the environment is with factories. I can't afford to right now with the tariffs. Domestic houses are so overrun with products and their pipelines full. So I'm not sure what this is going to look like. But we operated so differently that I was able to, we didn't lose any customers. We didn't lose any money. We were in a safe place. So I guess that's what I'm doing differently is just going slowly, no debt, really just doing it the right way, I guess.
Oh yeah, thank you. Sorry, in sharing that process, it kind of reminded me to take things slowly myself. With starting this podcast, and just like taking it day by day, constantly kind of reevaluating, but not trying to like, I don't know, like we're not trying to like grow this huge thing overnight. Like you really have kind of inspired me in doing that as well, like just taking it day by day slowly, because I do want to always make sure, okay, my kids come first, my marriage comes first, my business with my husband comes first, and then it's like everything else just like slowly trickling in. So that has been really helpful for me to see you kind of doing that and then me implementing the same thing.
Yeah, I think again, it comes back to trust, right? Like, if you keep yourself aligned, so you put God first, your family first, and you don't live outside of, there's a whole biblical way of life where you don't spend more than you have. You don't, you live moderately, like all of these things. God will honor that. And the things that you're doing on the side that are, bringing glory to him and to really, like you're doing, telling good stories and to like really encourage people to keep going. Like those things will grow naturally because you're living your life the right way. And so I guess kind of how I've tried to do it differently. Not to say that it's been, I mean, on top of I have to make money and this is takes a lot of time. So, if you're putting time and energy into something that's not making a ton of money, you really have to kind of examine what you're doing. And that's been hard for me because, I do have to put my energy where I can support my family. And so figuring that out has been a little bit of a journey, but
Yeah. So what's in the future for you? What's next? What are some things you can kind of share with us?
Oh, well, I'm attempting to get my children to graduate high school. So that is my future. Business-wise, I don't know. This whole tariff thing has really kind of made me, I can't say it's shaking me at all, because I can't really say I had any like concrete plans. I really feel like I am daily like, okay, what do I do now? When I left Evie's Tree, I took on some fractional work, which is just part-time executive work for companies. And they were all short-term. So I guess I've kind of been thinking in short-term for a while now, you know, like, okay, we're just going to get to June, or we're going to get to August, or, and so I guess, I don't know. I don't know what God's got. I do think there is a lot of, there is a lot here that God wants me to do as far as the podcast is concerned and the writing. I really feel like I'm supposed to focus a bit on that. So I'm probably just going to be sitting in that space for a bit. I don't know where the clothing is going to go. It really kind of just depends on how everything shakes out with the economy and, you know, one day at a time. So.
And I like that, because that ties into what we were just talking about, you know,
yeah.
You are just taking it one day at a time,
yeah,
and, you know, not rushing anything. So I love that.
Yeah.
So the last couple questions that we have for you, we like to end all of our interviews with these last two questions, is what is the worst advice that you've ever received, and what is the best advice that you've ever received?
Gosh, the worst advice I've ever received. I would say I've received a lot of bad advice over the years being in business. I wish I had never taken out debts, to be honest with you. I received a lot of advice, and I think debt can be helpful for businesses, but I did not, as a person, know what to do with it. So I was not able to treat it the way that it was meant to be treated. So I had a lot of business advice throughout my Evie's Tree process that I just wish I had maybe thought deeper about the way that I was managing money. So I think I probably got a lot of poor money advice, maybe would be the right. I think the best advice I have ever received was from my therapist when she came, you know, when I met her recently, and she said, Amy, look in the mirror. And that was the best advice I had ever, ever gotten, because I think it saved my life, really. It helps me become who I am right now. And if she had not stopped me, I had been going to a lot of therapy with other people, and nobody had said that to me. And I think that probably would be number one, is her forcing me to look at myself and really examine myself. And, you know, she kept saying, he who was out without sin cast the first stone. And that, I think, really saved me.
Thank you. Yeah, I need to find a better therapist. Hearing all of this, I'm like, I need to find a better therapist.
I think there's a lot of good, to be fair, I think there's a lot of good therapists out there. I think it is hard to find a good one. And yeah. I can't recommend mine enough. She's all online. You just go onto her site. She's thriveonlinecounseling.com. You can just schedule. You don't even have to do like an intake form. You just pay for a session and show up. And if you don't like her, you don't go back. It's that easy. So, but yeah, it's hard. It's hard to find a good one.
Yes. So where can people find you?
Oh yeah. So I'm Amy Mirafflor on Instagram. So just AmyMiraflor. And my Substack, which is my blog, is amymiraflor.substack.com. And, my podcast is Glory Revealed, and you can just find it on anywhere you listen to the podcast. So,
yes, and we will put all of those, you know, links below down in the description as well. But once again, Amy, thank you so, so much. Like I said, you have changed my life in so many ways with your honesty and your vulnerability and everything that you've shared today as well. I feel like every time I talk to you, I learn something new. So just thank you so much for gracing us with your presence, for spending time with us, and for giving such good advice to our listeners.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me. It's an honor. So you're welcome.
Thank you for coming on. I really learned a lot, and I feel like I really resonated with a lot of the stuff that you said, and I'm sure they will too.
Oh, thank you. That's great.
Yeah, and as usual, we want to thank our listeners and our viewers and everyone that is here. If you have not subscribed, please subscribe to the channel and also subscribe to Apple or Spotify, wherever you listen, so you don't miss any of our downloads. And we hope that you all have a beautiful, fantastic, and blessed week, and we will see you guys next week. Bye.